First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Hey everyone, I'm a regular guest host on the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network. Welcome back everyone to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline filling in for Alan today. And we are beginning our second hour with Kate Monroe, Marine Corps veteran, CEO of Vetcom, a company that helps veterans access VA coverage. Former Republican candidate for California's 49th Congressional District. I'm sure there are a lot of stories there. She also wrote Race to Save America. Kate Monroe, thank you so much for joining us here on the Alan Nathan Show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, you have, I'm surprised, there was this amazing, among so many, cabinet meetings broadcast at Donald Trump of independent journalists who were attacked in Portland and in Seattle. You've witnessed leftist chaos in Portland firsthand while you were on the street helping veterans. Talk about that experience, because somehow the Democrats are pretending to be Baghdad Bob. Oh, there's no violence in Seattle. There's no violence here. Chicago, no. That's a figment of your imagination. What a profound insult to people who are being hurt and even killed to suggest there is that, you know, there's only a few murders, and that's okay. We can tolerate a few murders in our city. Talk about this, would you?
Yeah, you know, I have walked the streets in San Diego, Oceanside, L.A. and Skid Row, and the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and Portland in New York, and Portland is like a zombie apocalypse. Every time I have been there has been drug dealers everywhere. There has been people bent over the waist. There has been people naked doing nefarious things. There is drugs everywhere. I had a lady stand over the top of my head while I was interviewing another female veteran, and she was smoking fentanyl over the top of my head and got me and my older son so high we nearly had to go to the hospital in an ambulance. We had to call the police. I mean, there's people living. We crawled underneath the freeway, and there are so many drugs and needles and little tinfoil papers. There are cops all over the place. I've been chased down Portland streets with somebody with a machete. I mean, it is absolutely absurd.
Unbelievable.
The sex trafficking that goes on there, the drugs. It is one of the least safe cities that I've ever been to, other than walking through the Tenderloin, which is absolutely abhorrent as well. But to sit and pretend and try to gaslight America that nothing exists there, sort of like what San Diego did. San Diego used to pretend like we didn't have a homeless problem either until I brought that to the main stage and said, oh, look, we don't have an invisibility cloak. There's all this crime.
Yes. You know, what probably bothers me and maybe a whole lot of listeners the most, well, a lot of things bother us about it, is that it is not, you can't say that this is incompetence. This is, you can't do a job of making this as horrific as it is if it is not deliberate. The question is, why? If you accept that you couldn't even be this incompetent, you know, unless it was deliberate, then why is it that Democrats love crime, love chaos? I think I know the answer, but from your perspective and what you've seen, why is it that Democrats are so ignorant they're willing to expose themselves to the country as being pro-crime, pro-Hamas, pro-illegal alien, and against innocent citizens trying to live their lives?
Well, it's twofold. If you're talking about homelessness, the homeless industrial complex is just a massive grift. And if you were to spend all these dollars meant to solve the issue of homelessness, there wouldn't be any more and the grift would end. So as long as money goes out and we pay and pray that things get fixed, it never will. You will never fix homelessness in the way that they are doing it now. But secondarily, if you're talking about illegal migrants and all the crime, I have to think at this point they have such Trump derangement syndrome that anything he wants to fix, even if it would be good for the country and for their constituents and even their own family, they have to be against it. I mean, it must have been interesting today, all these Democrats having to come out and, you know, support Trump on the deal he did in Israel. I'm sure that that, you know, tasted like, you know,
well, many of them didn't. Many of them didn't want to. And how
I was surprised that any did.
No, of course. Of course, you're right. How then do you explain the open, welcoming, even flying 20 million plus illegal aliens in this country into this country before Trump? It was ever thought that he would win a second term. How's that even possible? I mean, we all speculate on what it is, but we've also got terrorist cells in this country that came in during that influx of populations, and the Democrats cheer that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't have to speculate. I went down to the border here in San Diego about 30 times. I was that crazy lady that put razor wire up at the border. I created the border vets, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to stand in the gap, and I'm going to do what's right, and I'm going to, you know, light a fire under the butts of Americans and make them realize we don't have to go quietly into the night. But the reason that they do it is because when all these people come in, if you're the party that invited them here, marketed here, paid them to get here, they inevitably will end up voting for you. And then they procreate at a higher rate. Mm. They will end up having Democrat dominance by the 2030 census. If it hadn't have been for Trump winning, they might have pulled off the biggest scam on America. And we would have flipped the whole country blue just by all of the illegal actions that
population.
They took. That's exactly what they wanted to do. And thank God that we pattern interrupted that trajectory.
It is really quite amazing that within a hair's breadth of Donald Trump turning his head a little more than a year ago, the entire trajectory that you're talking about and so much more was changed. And he seems to be on a race against time to change and preserve and set right as much as he possibly can, given where he started and where we started. Your thoughts on that?
100%. Well, I mean, that's actually why I named my book The Race to Save America. It wasn't just the political race, the action of people, you know, the races we were all in. It was the race. It was that we were about to hit an event horizon where we couldn't turn back. I mean, if we had kept going, like, let's just isolate, say, military recruiting. If Trump had not got in, we would have gone over the event horizon and we would never have been able to get back. Now you see recruiting thriving because of, you know, patriotism. We have a great Secretary of War in there that's bringing that oorah, Semper Fidelis sort of spirit, Americanism back to our troops. But really every single thing that Trump touches becomes, you know, more American, more eagles flying, more fireworks going off. It reminds me of being a kid in the Reagan era, you know, when things were fun and people had barbecues and flags were waving. And it just, I'm excited for where we're going.
Yeah. Speak a little bit about Pete Hegseth, who Trump can't say enough good things about. I loved his speech, his unabashed declaration that there will be no more trans politics, gender politics, climate change, none of this. No, we're the military. We're supposed to kill people and break things and keep and prevent that from happening if at all costs. What'd you think about that?
I thought it was great. You know, I got asked a lot, you know, quite a lot about, you know, what did I think of the fat general's comment? And I said, this is the military. Somebody calling someone fat in the military is the least of their worries. If your feelings are that small in the military, you probably don't belong there. It is not a, you know, there's no HR running around. Oh, you can't say this. You can't say that. You know, they're a war fighting group. I'm so glad because I was in the Marine Corps during an era.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
Oh, I'm happy to have served. But I mean, I was in the Marine Corps in an era where it was very full speed ahead. There was no such thing as a stress card and, you know, getting out of PT for this and that. And it's just, I'm excited to see us get back to there because if countries will try you on if they think your military is weak. If your military is not weak and you signal to the rest of the world, not only are we not
weak, we've come full circle.
We now have the Department of War.
We've come full circle because I believe with every fiber of my being that the left isn't interested in any of those issues. They're interested in weakening America, weakening America's resolve and ready it for communism. Kate Monroe, I wish we had more time. Get her book, Race to Save America. It sounds like a page turner. Thank you so much for joining us, Kate.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate your time. Well, we're just speeding right along on the Alan Nathan Show. Next, we're going to have a Republican senatorial candidate who's going to talk to us about, you're not going to want to miss this. We'll be right back after this.
SUVs are, without question, the most popular vehicle choice in the United States. But with so many models available, it can be difficult to know which one would be best for you. Kia America's James Bell has more.
People often think SUVs and crossovers are the same, but they're not. Traditional SUVs are built on truck platforms and are designed for towing and more off-roading exercises. Crossovers, on the other hand, share more with cars, which means better fuel economy and a smoother ride. The decision really comes down to the lifestyle and how you plan to use your next vehicle.
What might surprise you is that SUVs are not limited to gas engines. Hybrid and plug-in hybrid options are widely available. The Kia Sportage, for example, comes in gas, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid, giving drivers great choices for how they plan to travel.
There's no one-size-fits-all SUV, but almost all are built for adventure. And the trick is finding the one that amplifies your lifestyle and your passengers.
To learn more about the latest SUVs and crossovers, visit Kia.com.
So there's really three factors that come into play that says exactly why mid-October is a great time to buy. So first, there's just more homes on the market this time of year. And so that means that buyers are going to have more options and more time to make their choices, and that they're going to see that sellers are more motivated to get out of the market and make a sale. Second, this is a time of year where there's less competition from other buyers. So there's just fewer buyers in the market, and that's going to mean that buyers are going to notice that, you know, there's less people to compete with. And then third, prices actually come down this time of year relative to other times of year too. So there's really a lot of savings to be had if you're a buyer who's fortunate enough to be in the market right now. And then get connected with a realtor on realtor.com. This is someone who knows your market inside and out and is going to be able to help you to guide your home search from start to finish. So for more information, you can go to realtor.com either through our app or our website. And if you really want to know more about why this is such a great time to buy, go to realtor.com/besttimetobuy.
About 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and more women under 50 are facing the disease than ever before. Dr. Lori J. Kirstein from the American College of Surgeons has more.
Being diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age can create unique challenges. Many young women may be busy building their careers, relationships, or families, and suddenly face tough medical decisions that can affect the rest of their lives.
Surgeons are seeing this shift firsthand, and research is underway to improve treatment options and better understand how to support women with breast cancer.
Receiving support during and after breast cancer treatment is essential. Younger patients often have a harder time finding resources that fit their needs, from fertility preservation to guidance on recovery after treatment. The American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer has resources to help address the needs of younger women and all women with breast cancer.
Learn more at facs.org/breastcare.
Some seizures may go unnoticed, but the stories of people with epilepsy will not. Share your story to educate others.
To empower others to seek treatment.
To show others they are not alone.
To help others change their journey.
Let's get everyone to start talking about epilepsy and seizures.
I am ready to share my story.
I'm ready to share my story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
For more information, visit changeourstory.org.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And I think we have our guest, right, Mr. Producer? Good. We have Republican senatorial candidate in Florida. He's an entrepreneur, a pilot, an attorney, a former state prosecutor, and a member of the National Guard. He's also a conservative activist. His latest book is Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. Keith Groves joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Welcome, Keith. Good to have you along.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, so this is quite an interesting kettle of fish here for a bunch of reasons, and you're here to talk to us about it. GOP Rep. Chip Roy, I think it's pronounced Raw, Wah, isn't it? Or is it Roy? It's Roy, of Texas, and several other House Republicans are pushing a bill to prohibit Sharia law adherent aliens from entering the U.S. and remove any such individuals who are present within the country. I can just hear and feel the left going bonkers over this one and screaming religious freedom while they scream about free Palestine from the river to the sea and genocide. There's just so much here. Talk about this and where you stand on this question.
Well, I think you're 100% correct that the left is guaranteed to side with those who want to bring Islamic Sharia law to America. And they probably are going to scream freedom of religion and try to tell us that that's what the First Amendment requires, but it isn't. They're just wrong. The freedom of religion included in the First Amendment does not mean that Islamic Sharia law can be implemented on Americans. That's completely prohibited by the First Amendment. So it's a little odd to see them use that argument in favor of Sharia law. It's a pattern, though. We're pretty much guaranteed anytime there is an anti-American sentiment or ideology, the Democrat Party is going to side with the anti-American ideology. They
Without
are anti-everything America.
Without a doubt. I just pinned on my Twitter page for your amusement a short statement which kind of epitomizes that. And it's just so true. Democrats used to be anti-war. Now they're pro-war so long as America is losing. Ain't that
It
the
seems
truth?
That way. It's
yes.
Very strange to see it.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's not unrelated to the so-called LGBT XYZ crowd who are pro-Palestinians and completely ignore the likelihood that they would be hung from cranes or thrown off buildings were they to go to Gaza or another Arab state. Let's talk about this Sharia law. Many of us think we know, but we're not sure. What is it about Sharia law, which is happening in London right now as we speak? There's a London Muslim mayor, and I read, just to start us off, I read that a woman was arrested in London for refusing, not wanting to hear about Islam and to be read the Quran on the streets of London, if you can believe that.
Well, without going into the details of Sharia law, the interesting overview is this. They do not believe under Sharia law that you have a right to be anything other than Muslim. So it's obviously one thing that, you know, we believe in the freedom of religion, which means you worship whomever you want, however you want. That's your business. When you try to force other people to follow your beliefs, that's when it becomes a problem. And people would rightly reject it if, you know, Catholicism were, for example, forced upon absolutely everyone. You must follow
all Catholic
rules.
Like in the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. You know, that's exactly. The whole point of our freedom of religion in right. America. That's what our founding fathers wanted. They didn't want any particular religion to be forced upon people. But it's interesting the way it's been interpreted in recent years. Freedom of religion doesn't mean that religion is banned from everything government. Government people are still allowed to have their religious beliefs. They're just not allowed to force them on others. And we've seen that rule sort of bent and perverted in recent years where, you know, like high school coaches that are praying on the field have been fired or sanctioned because they say that's imposing your religion on others. But it really isn't, so long as it's a voluntary action. What Sharia law hopes to do is force it on others. And the idea that we have gays or women in favor of anything Muslim or Sharia law is mind-blowing.
And how would, in your knowledge, so people will know or understand, how would Islam be forced on others?
Well, when we've seen it in other countries, when Muslims achieve a majority, they start to demand that you comply with their religious beliefs. And it starts off innocuous enough. They say, you know, we want to make sure that you only offer halal foods in your restaurants or in your grocery stores. And then they want to make sure that you allow them to broadcast their call to prayer at all hours of the early morning and evening, because they think that's what's required for them to please their God. And before you know it, you're starting to see all of these signs in a community where their religious rules are applied not just to themselves, but to everyone else also, and they vehemently object to anyone who believes they should not be subject to those rules. This is spelled out in yes. great detail in the Quran.
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that a lot of the left useful idiots have been primed for this sort of thing with stuff like LGBT. I have to force you to use a pronoun. I'd be willing to bet that the Muslim Marxist mayor, that's three M's, mayoral candidate in New York City, God forbid he is elected, doesn't really believe in freedom for LGBTQXYZ because he's a Muslim. And in all the countries that he supports, they would indeed be thrown off buildings and hung from cranes. But it's a great way to treat people to the whole idea that everyone else is entitled to my opinion by force. And that and it's paradoxical, because if you talk to the leftists who really aren't aware of this, they won't see the problem in it. So there's not a question there, just your comment. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really where it's important to distinguish the idea that Islam is a religion. You know, we think of religions, we think of Christianity, subsets of that, like Catholicism. We think of religions as religions, and it's important to recognize that Islam is not just a religion. It's a religion with an overarching political ideology and infrastructure, and everywhere right. it is implemented, it's law, not just belief.
Yeah. Keith, can you stay with us for one more segment? I'd love to continue this discussion with you.
I'd love to. Let's do it.
Wonderful. Keith Groves is going to stay with us one more segment. Love it. It's a big topic, and we'll let him explore it even further and his campaign as well. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned for that after this.
Open enrollment season is here, and it's a great opportunity to make sure your health plan still works for your needs and budget. It's important to keep in mind that enrollment periods vary depending on how you get your health insurance. If you're on an employer plan, it usually happens between now and the end of the year. For Medicare, the annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December the 7th. And for the health insurance marketplace, most states, it runs from November 1st through January 15th. When you're comparing plans, look beyond the monthly premiums. Check that your doctor and your prescriptions are covered. Review mental health and wellness benefits. And see if extras like dental, vision, and hearing programs are included. Digital tools and 24/7 virtual visits can also make care more convenient. And with so much misleading information online, always check the source. If something seems unclear or too good to be true, ask your doctor or your health plan before making changes. For more, visit UHCOpenEnrollment.com.
I first want to underscore that Hispanics may be getting the disease younger and may be more at risk, so it's important to be aware of this. Having, a history of a Parkinson's in the family, but having chronic constipation, whether in yourself or in your family, also chronic depression yourself or a family, then having smell loss, and also having a long-standing, what we call REM sleep behavior. That is when you act out in your dreams, you act out in your sleep, you talk in your sleep, you may sleepwalk. All these are apparently risk factors that contribute to perhaps having a greater incidence or chance of developing Parkinson's. You can go to the michaeljfox.org/PPMI to find out more so that we can make bigger strides. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. We are talking with Keith Gross, entrepreneur, pilot, attorney, and author of his latest book, Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. Thank you so much for staying with us, Keith. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you for another segment.
Good. And you rightfully corrected me that you are not a Republican senatorial candidate in Florida at the present time, but I assume that you were one, right?
I did run in the primary for United States Senate last term, mostly just to make sure that incumbents are held accountable. We've got a lot of incumbents that just keep running for office term after term. No one dares to step up and challenge them. And as a result, they get the idea that they can do whatever they want and they will never be fired. So yeah. I think it's important that people run against these incumbents to make sure that the people have a voice and a real choice.
And then not only does that rhyme, but it's a great point. Thank you for stepping up. Do you have plans to run again for any elected office?
Well, I don't imagine I'm going to start being any less opinionated, so I doubt I'm going to sit silently on the sidelines while I keep blowing trillions of dollars up there. I'm going to have to get involved one way or another eventually.
Great. So what was it, before we leave this topic of Republicans pushing a bill to block and deport Sharia law adherents, aliens, what was it about this, and are you doing anything in a, I don't know, a more formal basis to support those Republicans who are doing this? Because I know there's going to be an enormous pushback. I haven't heard about it yet, but I know there will be. What are you doing, and what can other people who agree with you do to make sure that we're clear about the delineations we mentioned in the last segment?
You know, it's really about educating members of your family, your friends, and your broader community about the realities of immigration policy and how that policy needs to be adapted for the benefit of Americans at large. Immigration is supposed to be a way that we allow people to come into our country who are going to join our ranks and our society, who are going to add to the fabric of America and help make America a better place. Immigrants are people that we allow to join us. We don't have to let them in. It is a privilege to be allowed to immigrate into America, and we should only allow those who are going to confer a benefit on the nation. If you fling open our borders to anyone and everyone, especially those who have belief systems that are dramatically different from what we think of as core American values, you know, it's just a matter of time before we lose those core American values. And when you allow people to come in large numbers, particularly those that have broken third world paradigms, it is only a matter of time before they begin to impose those broken third world ideologies on American communities. And we're seeing it in places like Minneapolis and possibly New York soon. It's
Without
up to
a
us
doubt.
To educate our communities to stop that yeah. from happening. It's not yeah. xenophobic to want to protect American values.
Without a doubt, it's not xenophobic to have secure borders either, but you wouldn't know it by the left. Here's another question on that subject, which is difficult for people to understand, and we got to mention it. Again, this is an ideology that we're pointing out here that's not consistent with American values. You could, and that is that many of us who've studied this a little bit know that there's something I think is called taqiyya, which is that if you are an adherent to Sharia law, it's perfectly okay to lie to the infidel. So what's to stop those adherents, knowing full well that people might use this law, if it were to be enacted, to have them deported or not welcomed into the country? It's easy to lie and say that you say something different and then go about doing exactly that as soon as you get into the country. One last sentence. I've always known that the greatest and most courageous Muslims are those who have been willing to publicly denounce Sharia law and terrorism and other things because that puts their lives in danger. If they don't do that, then one ought to be able to question. So how do you deal with that with a law like this?
Well, I think it's important what you've just pointed out, which is that it's a pretty well-documented idea in Islamic culture that it is permissible to lie to get ahead. And if that means pretending not to hold your religious beliefs so that you can get ahead in a country where Muslims are not a majority, we've seen that happen a lot. And People need to be aware that that happens. People need to be aware of the fact that it's not just about these folks expressing their religious beliefs. It's about them forcing them on others.
Right.
I mean, I think that when you're called Islamophobic, well, if you're a gay man, as I am, or a woman, or anyone else who's not going to be treated very kindly in a country with Sharia law, darn right, you should be Islamophobic. They do not mean well for you.
Phobic means you're concerned or you're worried. If you have reason to be worried, then maybe you're not phobic. That phobia means an unfounded fear. And you intrigue me tremendously that you're gay. How do you get this word out to what we like to call the gay community so we don't have, as Bibi Netanyahu said, LGBT people for Palestine is like chickens for KFC?
It's a good analogy because it's true. The reality is I don't know how you get through to the gay community because I'm not really in touch with what most people think of as the gay community. When they adopted all these extra letters and started having all these crazy gender ideologies, it became pretty difficult to relate to people that have no logical sense. So we've got to see a sort of a reformation. And, you know, there are groups out there that have what a lot of folks, I think as J.D. Vance would call them, the normal gays. You've got Log Cabin Republicans that's full of conservative gay men and conservative gay women. And it spawned lots of productive folks into the administration. People like Scott Bessent, who are up there doing a great job.
Absolutely.
Who
it's
happened
not,
to be married
it's
to
not well
a person
known.
Of the same sex.
Yeah, yeah, no. Absolutely. There are gay conservatives, but they don't lead with that as you didn't. Because it's a private issue, but they've
well, it's
politicized
just kind of irrelevant,
it.
You know, it doesn't impact my day-to-day life.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What you do in your bedroom—that's what we used to believe at one time. Also, I think it could be argued that the whole—I wanted to mention Gays Against Groomers, a group that I appreciate a great deal because they stood up against this sexualizing of children and claiming that somehow 7-year-olds could be either gay or trans and not allowing them to grow up. And they haven't even reached puberty yet. It's absurd not to understand that they're being used for political agendas.
And that really highlighted the division and, you know, the pushback that a lot of normal gays have against this LGBT ABC community because they do things that just don't make sense. I mean, if you're a 4-year-old and you're trans, your parents have a mental illness. There's no 4-year-old that is actually
that
trans. That just doesn't make any
exactly
sense.
Exactly.
And
true. Exactly
it,
true.
You see it on TV where it's like they say, I've got 2 kids who are trans and one of them's 4 and one of them's 8. These people have a mental illness that they're imposing on their children and it's child abuse. If the kid watched Peter Pan and he said, I think I'm going to be like Captain Hook. Please chop off my arm so I can have a hook. We'd all say, cool idea, kid. But no, you can't actually do that.
There might
pretty
be
much
a group,
what they're doing.
There might be groups in this country today or that crazy and psychotic to maim a child as they do by giving hormones to children and mastectomies for 12-year-olds. It's appalling that people were so willing to jump on that bandwagon. I'm just, as a former social worker, I'm absolutely delighted and thrilled that Donald Trump had the courage to just say it straight out and out loud. And it's interesting. It was like the emperor has no clothes. Suddenly people went, yeah, yeah, women and men's sport. I mean, men and women's sports doesn't make any sense, right? It's not okay for us to give them steroids, but it is okay for men to hammer women in a wrestling ring if they're wearing a dress. It's insane, really, truly. You got me going there.
It's
Keith,
nice
with
to
our...
see the return to normalcy.
Yeah, it is. With our little bit of time left, tell everybody about this book of yours, Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation, and also how people can get your book.
Well, the book is available anywhere books are sold, at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's an audiobook on Audible. You can follow me online at KeithGross.com or social media at KeithGrossFL. And the book's just a bio. It's about growing up in rural North Florida and the common sense wisdom we need in America.
I love it. It sounds fascinating. Thank you for your candor, for your conservatism, for your great thoughts here on the Alan Nathan Show. We appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. Well, we're going to wrap up this show with one more guest. I'll tell you about him when we get back.
Hi, I'm Christina Daves. I'm a lifestyle expert with some tailgate tips for you. So my go-to drink this tailgate season is Carbless, premium cocktails in a can. They have delicious flavors like pineapple and watermelon, and it's a woman and veteran-owned business. You want to stay hydrated and healthy on game day? So these are Sierra packets. They come from the Vitamin Shop, the leading destination for lifelong wellness solutions. You have electrolytes, and then you have your greens that are organic fruits and vegetables, probiotics, and fiber, so you feel great all day. And then you want to take your drinks. You make them at home. This is an insulated flask from High Camp Flask. This is a Firefight version. It has two tumblers attached to it with a magnet, and these can be customized as well. So to get more tips like this, please go to my website at ChristinaDaves.com.
Obesity affects more than 40% of American adults, yet too often people are left without access to the support they need due to high costs, outdated one-size-fits-all treatments, or long wait times to see a specialist. Obesity medicine specialist and the head of weight loss at Hims & Hers, Dr. Craig Premack, explains.
The average wait time to see an obesity specialist in the U.S. is about 5 months. Through Hims & Hers, customers typically have their intake reviewed by a licensed provider in about 3 hours. A new analysis shows that customers accessing personalized GLP-1 treatment plans through Hims & Hers lost an average of 20 pounds, or 10% of their body weight, in 6 months. 75% of customers stayed on treatment after 6 months, far exceeding typical dropout rates. With a personalized approach and support across nutrition, movement, and mental health, and 24/7 access to a dedicated care team, the result is a comprehensive care experience that helps people succeed and build healthier lives for the long term.
To get started, visit forhers.com or hims.com.
While the number of highway rail crossing collisions, deaths, and injuries have dropped over the past 5 decades, every 3 hours in the U.S., a person or vehicle is involved in a train collision. September 15th to 21st is National SeaTrax Think Train Week. John Phleps, Norfolk Southern Chief Safety Officer.
Every safe choice around train tracks is a powerful one. This week shines a spotlight on the importance of staying alert and making smart decisions near train tracks. Trains are faster and quieter than most people realize, and they can take more than a mile to come to a complete stop. That's why it's critical to stay off tracks unless you're at a designated crossing. At crossings, always look and listen for trains and make sure you have a clear view in both directions before proceeding. Safety is a core value and the foundation of everything we do at Norfolk Southern, but safety isn't just our responsibility, it is everyone's. You have more power than the train to stop a crash before it happens by always making safe choices around tracks.
Visit norfolksouthern.com/railsafety to learn more.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And we are pleased to have with us, it's been a while since we have his guest, Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Foundation, joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Hi, Mark. Been a while.
Hi,
good
Karen.
To have you.
Yeah, hi, Karen. It's good to be with you. Thanks.
Yes. So federal workers are not getting paid because the Democrats are throwing yet another temper tantrum. What does the National Right to Work Foundation think about all this and give us an update on what's going on?
Yeah, Karen. Well, it does drag on. But one of the interesting kind of man-bite-dog story is the fact that now union officials, federal union officials, are calling on the Congress to basically open the government back up again. You know, it's kind of ironic that these union officials who support the Democrat minorities in both the House and the Senate overwhelmingly with their political money, if they basically went to Chuck Schumer and said, hey, we're ready for the government to open up again, I think things would change. But look, these Democrats think they're still winning this battle, but I don't think the American taxpayers think that they are. And I think it's been different this time. But, you know, these union officials are kind of recognizing now that the potential of the Trump administration to kind of really, really, really reform the federal bureaucracy is a reality. And they're saying, oh, my gosh, maybe we need to get back there and stop this nonsense and get back to work.
So everybody is saying, not everybody, but a whole bunch of people immediately concluded that Chucky Schumer was doing all this to prove his moxie to the radical left of his party, which is kind of redundant because the radical left controls his party. Do you buy into that, or is there something going on? Because this is the dumbest thing ever. Why are they doing it? It's dumb.
Yeah, and politically, I don't think they're reading the mindset of again, the American taxpayer and those people that are voting for politicians. Well, Schumer, you know, feels like he's got exposure on the left from AOC as he comes up for re-election in the Senate. That's kind of an interesting calculation. I'm not sure if that's legitimate, but if he's feeling that pressure from the radical left of his party, then that would explain why he's doing what he's doing to try to protect his backside there. Although that caucus is getting bigger all the time, Karen, as you know better than I do, following this stuff on a broader scale of issues and policy implications. But I, you know, it is silly. What they're literally asking for is a continuation of the Biden budget. Just keep that in place, and let's talk about these other issues after we get the government open again using a continuing resolution that, again, is the budget numbers and the appropriation numbers that the Democrats basically proposed back during the Biden administration. The fact – and I think, Karen, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they voted for basically this budget not too long ago, and they're now saying it's inadequate because the Republicans want to keep the government open on this with this continuing resolution.
Yeah, and among the many things that they're counting on that is more than just a miscalculation is that the great majority of people who are frustrated by this tantrum that they're throwing, they don't understand as much as the average person, not, of course, Alan Nathan listeners, don't understand what you just said. The average person, as soon as you say continuing resolution or rescission, their eyes glaze over. What they care about is that they're not getting paid and is somebody's to blame for it. Is it true, and I think it is, that they're fighting because they want illegals to get health care?
Yeah, that really seems to be the single sticking point about this is the maintenance of this funding for illegal aliens in healthcare. Because, again, they voted for this appropriation to kind of clean up and reform Obamacare previously. And I think everyone understands that needs to be done. But this is really filtered down to that issue, Karen, you just articulated. And I think most of the American people say, well, pox on both houses. We don't think it's necessary to pay for illegal health care and for health care for illegal aliens.
Yeah. Of all the issues that they could go to the mattresses on, that one is almost hilarious. You have a president who was elected on so many issues. Thank God. And one of them is the only president that I know of in any history, almost, except one maybe, who actually took it upon himself to deport as many of the 20 plus million illegal aliens that were welcomed into this country, even flown into this country. And that's the issue that they want to die, the hill they want to die on. I mean, my strategy really sometimes is when the opponent is destroying himself, get out of the way.
yeah, that's right. And you know, when you get to the federal bureaucracy, I mean, President Trump is one of the first, if not the first, to really go take a look at the scope and the size of the federal government and how the executive branch is being managed. Article 2, you know, allows us to hold the president singularly accountable for the executive branch under the Constitution. And so when these agencies go off the rails, I mean, we can't hold anybody accountable but the president. And he's finally taken it seriously, saying, let's get Article 2 executive agencies under control. Let's look at each of the agencies. Let's look at the funding levels, look at the staffing levels, because I don't believe, Karen, that anyone thinks the government is being run perfectly, that it's expending exactly the amount of money that it should, that it's got the exact number of employees that it should, et cetera, et cetera.
Why do you think Trump is – I mean, it's interesting he's straddling a couple of issues, because when I heard this – of course, I'm a great fan of DOGE and everything that DOGE stood for. We haven't heard much about it. But if Trump can cut government and use this as a way to do it permanently, shouldn't a lot of conservatives be jumping for joy at this point? What do you think?
Yeah, not just conservatives, but the American taxpayer. I mean, the size and scope of government and the amount of our debt and the amount of our just, you know, the imbalance of our government when it comes to the fiscal structure is something that we need to get under control. And it may be that we're too far gone, Karen. I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
I don't think the president believes that. But there's work to be done. And one of the big jobs is exactly what you talk about, what DOGE started out to do. And I guess what do we get for DOGE's activities? $9 billion out of a $37 trillion deficit. There's a lot more work to be done. The president wants to do it. And part of it is the size and scope of the bureaucracy. And it goes right to where we stand right now.
Yeah. How can people find you at Right to Work, Mark Mix?
Yeah, Karen, nrtw.org, nrtw.org.
Right to Work. It's part of the whole idea of liberty and freedom in America. Mark Mix, thank you so much for joining us on the Alan Nathan Show. We appreciate it. That does it for this edition of the Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network. Tune in every weekday for more. Good day.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.